I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Top of the 8 o'clock hour here at our nation's capital. It's overtime here on 106.7 The Fan. We're always streaming live nationally on the free Odyssey apps. The Youngest in Charge Movement, Linnell Willingham, taking up to 10 o'clock before we hand things over to the Infinity Sports Network. Big thank you to Josh Robbins of The Athletic for joining us in the last segment. I want to switch gears here a little bit as we were talking all things NBA there in that 7 o'clock hour. It is that time of year. And I guess this is me getting older and more mature. Normally, I used to love this time of year, in the National Football League in particular. It's the dead period, and all of your favorite pundits from ESPN and NFL Network and Fox Sports One and wherever you get your sports content outside of here, which should be the only place you get your sports content. But it's list season. I say it all the time. It is a list season. Guys put together their rankings. We got the top 100 that comes out on NFL Network. And these lists, normally not kind to the Washington Commanders. And there's one list in particular that honestly leaves me with a bone to pick. And like I said, I'm getting more mature because I used to love these lists. Now I hate them because I realize what they are used to do. It is to drive conversation and get people to be angry about how said pundit views their team. Seth Walder of ESPN did an insider piece this morning, is when it dropped. Or excuse me, dropped yesterday morning.
Are you implying these are clickbait, Linnell?
I am implying that it's clickbait! Clickbait, clickbait, clickbait. I'm a fan of clickbait in the right situation. There are times where clickbait can be beneficial to the world, but not in this situation, not in this scenario. Seth Walder, who heads ESPN's analytics department, super smart cookie, someone who, you know, was pretty well respected in NFL circles. He was tasked with giving out off-season grades to every team in the National Football League as we get geared up for training camp. He gives you a letter grade, he can give you an A or an F. And the grade that he gave for the Washington Commanders was head scratching at best. Seth Walder of ESPN graded the Commanders offseason with a C+. And the biggest move was drafting Jaden Daniels, he said. The move that he liked, signing edge rusher Dorrance Armstrong. And then the move that he disliked was not upgrading the offensive line more. And he went out and put a nice blurb together on what, you know, what his expectations were for the Commanders this year and why he gave him the C grade. I don't know if I necessarily have a problem with the grade. More, I think I have a problem with the move he disliked more than the grade. And I guess I'm in the minority with this. I continue to believe that what Washington did this offseason along their offensive line was yeoman's work. And there's one big unknown in all of this, and it is the left tackle spot set to be manned by either Cornelius Lucas or the Washington Commanders' third-round pick out of TCU, Brandon Coleman. Now, I am a Brandon Coleman stan. We got to interview him shortly after the draft with Chris Russell over on the Team 980. I also got the chance to go one-on-one with him about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago at the conclusion of mandatory minicamp. I believe that was last week. Time is just running together at this point. But I got to talk to him at mandatory minicamp, and it was during mandatory minicamp when they first rolled out their 11-on-11 stuff, and we got to see them go 11-on-11 for the first time. He was the starting left tackle during the 11-on-11 stuff out at mandatory minicamp. which lends me to believe that he's got a real legit shot of being the week one starter. Now, like I continue to say about offensive line play, right? It's hard to evaluate the offensive line during OTAs in mandatory minicamp because there's just not pads on, and it is a padded sport and a padded position, I guess is the best way that I would put it. You gotta be able to judge physicality up front. And without pads on, it's hard to do that. But with that being said, based off of everything you heard about this kid coming out of TCU and then some text messages that my pal and co-host Chris Russell has received from folks over at TCU, there is high hopes for what Brandon Coleman could be at left tackle. And I continue to say, if he turns out to be the left tackle of the future, I think the outlook of this draft class this offseason completely shifts in a positive direction. Firmly believe that. But to act as if Washington did nothing to upgrade their offensive line, it is kind of laughable to me, and why I take issue to Seth Walder's list. Seth Walder said the move that he disliked was not upgrading the offensive line more. I guess he is giving them credit. He's just saying that they didn't do enough, or in his opinion, right? Because if you notice, they added, or they will have three new starters ultimately, and they added two new starters via free agency in Nick Allegretti, Super Bowl champion from the Kansas City Chiefs, and Tyler Biadasz, who has been the center in Dallas the past couple of years. Now, I really look at the Tyler Biadasz move and go, that's the one. The Tyler Biadasz move is the move up front that gives me the most hope because of what Tyler Biadasz has been the past couple of years in the National Football League. Tyler Biadasz has steadied the Cowboys' offensive line. Tyler Biadasz has been the consistent piece of Dallas's offensive line. And when you look at some of the advanced analytics on Tyler Biadasz, it allows you to understand why I'm so high on this guy. What Tyler Biadasz has the potential to be is the future center of the Washington Commanders for 5, 6, 7 years. 26 years old. Started 16 of 17 games last year. He had the 14th best pro football focus grade at the center spot. And a guy that's a former, fourth round pick, he has completely exceeded expectation for what he was supposed to be in this league. Right? He just has. For that reason, right, I have all the confidence in the world in Tyler Biadasz. And I'm trying to find the number here. It is something like 1,500 straight pass rush snaps for Biadasz without giving up a sack. And I found it right here. Tyler Biadasz, in his last 1,100 pass blocking snaps, hasn't given up a sack. So for that reason alone, right, he walks in automatically and serves as an instant upgrade for what Washington had up front, specifically at the center spot. So I'm happy about that. That, to me, was one of their marquee free agent signings. My favorite free agent signings of Washington. Biadasz. Bobby Wagner. Jeremy Chinn. Frankie Louvu. My top four signings for Washington. Notice I didn't put Dorrance Armstrong in there. Not like I don't like Dorrance. Is that what I'm saying at all? But I like the Louvu signing, the Chinn signing, more than I like them signing Dorrance Armstrong. But to grade Washington's offseason as a C, after all of the changes that they have made on both sides of the football, revamping the offensive line up front with now three projected new starters, you added to your tight end room by bringing in a established veteran like a Zach Ertz. You took a flyer on Austin Eckler, who I think could end up proving to be one of the best free agent signings in all the National Football League. You took a flyer on him after a down year, which he was plagued by injury. You've done a lot to improve this roster. A lot. And the big unknown and the big question mark that obviously will tie all of this together is whether or not Jaden Daniels ends up being the long-term answer at quarterback. That's what's going to tie it all together. But still, he is a massive unknown, and I can get away with speaking positively about him because we don't really have any reason to think negatively about him to this point. But with that being said, Washington's offseason grade from Seth Walder, this C+, was the lowest offseason grade that I've seen given out to the Washington Commanders this offseason, which is why it's startling and alarming to me. What does he see, or what doesn't he see, rather, that everyone else does? Because I can make the argument that Washington had one of the best offseasons in the National Football League, and I'm not the only person who thinks that. Our pal Nate Davis of the USA Today listed Washington's offseason grade, stunning, as an A. So, comparing what Nate Davis had to say about Washington's offseason to what Seth Walder had to say about Washington's offseason has honestly been one of the more fascinating things to pick apart here today.
I think we need to start grading lists.
Yeah. Isn't that the exercise that probably needs to happen? Great point. We should be grading some of these lists because the bottom line,
not just how they look at our team.
Yeah. Point blank. Because our list and our offseason grade isn't the only grade that I take issue with. They gave the Detroit Lions a C for their offseason grade. They re-signed Graham Glasgow, one of the best guards in football. Then they brought over Kevin Zeitler from the Ravens, one of the best guards in football.
I heard they kept their offensive coordinator
Yeah. Where'd you hear that at?
I heard it here first.
All right. But no, you know, so the grade for Detroit doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. They brought in DJ Reader to plug up the middle of their defensive line. They signed Marcus Davenport, former first-round pick that was worth taking a flyer on. They traded and drafted traded up for Terrion Arnold, one of the best corners in this class, filling huge positions of need. So for them to get the grade that they got, it's like, okay. You know, maybe look at Seth Walder's list. Hell of a lot different. But Nate Davis, as I mentioned, of USA Today, gave Washington an A for their offseason grade. And it was not the first A that has been given out to the Commanders this offseason in terms of their offseason grade. This is something that has been a reoccurring theme this offseason. Folks are high on what the Commanders have done. And I guess I shouldn't take such a dramatic pause after saying folks are high. You can get the wrong idea. But, you know, folks are high about what Washington has done this offseason. And I think for very good reason. You know, so to see Seth Walder give out a C+, it got me thinking, like, what did I not like about the Washington Commanders offseason? And when I say their offseason, we got to grade this thing all the way back to when Ron Rivera was fired. That is when the offseason started. That was their first move of the offseason. When I look at all the positive things that have happened during Washington's offseason, I guess it makes it easy to kind of gloss over some of the things that we're dissatisfied about. I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll line up your calls. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. What is your reaction to Washington being given a C+ for their offseason grade? And then what is the move this offseason or move that they didn't make that makes you scratch your head the most? We'll take your calls as I give you some of my thoughts next here on The Fan.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
1-800-636-1067 is the number on the MGM National Harbor Lister Lounge. You can tweet at me as well. It's at NELL underscore BTP, trying to make sense of Seth Walter's offseason grade for the Washington Commanders. He gave them a C+. And the one thing I would say is clearly me and him are looking at the offseason through a different lens and on a different timeline. As I said before we went to break last, in terms of if we were grading Washington's entire offseason all the way back from the first move that they made this offseason, that was firing Ron Rivera, not only do they have an A, I'd give them an A+. They went out and acquired the most sought-after talent evaluator on the market in Adam Peters. They landed Dan Quinn, who wasn't at the top of a lot of folks' list in terms of the head coaching candidates, but hiring him allowed you to put together a rock star staff that, you know, for my money, is going to be the big reason why this group is able to take a massive step forward next year. Because I think they finally have the right mix of guys in the building from a player standpoint, from a coaching standpoint, and then the guys that they have in the front office. But Seth Walter, I don't think he was looking at it that deep. I think he was looking at it from a talent acquisition standpoint, saying that they had a C+ offseason. Even then, under those circumstances, I would still disagree with Seth's evaluation. But I have to admit that, like, I am, the fact that I'm even admitting this pains me. I'm a little bit biased. Just a little bit. Just a little bit.
You?
Me? I know. Shocker. But look, bias may even be a strong word. I am just optimistic when it comes to this group. I am, here's a better phrase, Chris, cautiously optimistic about what the group could potentially be next season. But I still think that, yeah, I would grade their offseason as a B+ to an A because they got their franchise quarterback. They added some really nice pieces via free agency. And then they didn't tie themselves up financially for the future. Like, they still have a tremendous amount of flexibility in terms of what they could do in terms of, they still have a great amount of flexibility in terms of, like, the moves that they can make next offseason, the offseason after that. But I still think that Seth Walter's grade was a little bit too harsh, but I'm not willing to take into account some of what he was saying. The biggest issue that Seth Walter seems to have is the fact that they didn't upgrade the offensive line more. And as I've contended here, I think Washington has done a pretty decent job upgrading the offensive line, bringing in Tyler Biadasz, drafting Brandon Coleman. I know there are high hopes in the organization about what Nick Allegretti could potentially be, but I can understand why Seth Walter feels like they didn't do enough up front. If I was going to be critical of Washington's offseason, the offensive line moves or lack thereof would not be what I go after first. I know the offensive line's huge, but they did actually do enough, or they did actually make a genuine, honest attempt to upgrade that group. They did. The position unit in which I do think they neglected, and for good reason, I guess, is corner. I have more of an issue with how they handled corner this offseason in comparison to how they handled the offensive line. Now, both positions, they drafted a guy after round one to try and help upgrade. Mikey Samuels, still out of Michigan, to help you upgrade a corner. And then Brandon Coleman out of TCU to help you upgrade on the offensive line. That being said, the depth in that room, the depth at cornerback for Washington right now is suspect. Now, I continue to believe that they will get a lot better play out of the guys that they have in-house simply based on the fact that the coaching is going to be a hell of a lot better. It's not Brent Wieselmeyer coaching the secondary who got the job based off of, you know, reading secondary coaches for dummies and getting a high score in a quiz. He was completely unqualified to be coaching that position group.
Looking at the analytics.
What does Chris Russell call them, that caged animal? The analytics amigos is how Chris Russell refers to them. And I obviously, let me just say this. Anytime I refer to Chris Russell as a caged animal, know that that is like my Ace Boone Coon.
I mean, he's the rooster in the hen house.
And one of my absolute favorites to work with, and great person to work with on air, and an even better mentor and colleague off the air. So, because I saw people tweeting crazy things earlier about Chris Russell, and I'm like, chill, y'all chill on Chris Russell. Great dude. But corner would be more of the issue spot that I have in terms of how they handled the offseason. Hell, I can even make the argument about edge rusher. He said he liked the signing of Dorrance Armstrong. I can contend that while Dorrance Armstrong has had 7-sack year, 8.5-sack year, I still don't think Washington has that prove-it go-getter on the edge when it is 3rd and 7+, and you got to pin your ears back to go get the quarterback. Who am I confident in to go get him? Dorrance Armstrong is going to be the guy, apparently, but I question how Dorrance Armstrong will fare playing way more snaps here in Washington than he had to play in Washington because of the depth that, you know, Dallas had along the defensive front. That being said, I still think Dorrance Armstrong was a good signing, and I still think he is someone who is going to help this football team more than he's going to hurt this football team. But in terms of problem spots and areas that I felt they didn't address enough, edge rusher, I guess, I would say is one of those spots. Corner, I would say, is one of those spots. And then at edge rusher, it's not just about rushing the passer. I still contend that they don't have that edge setter to stop the run on the roster yet. We'll see, because training camp is going to show a lot about that. The rookie that they drafted out of Notre Dame could end up being that guy. Dorrance Armstrong could end up being that guy, and I just don't know it. Cleveland Farrell could end up being that guy. But all in all, I disagree with Seth's assessment that the offseason grade overall should have been a C+. But I do think it is like fantasy land to act as if they filled and plugged every hole that they had on this team this offseason. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. What is your reaction to Seth Walder of ESPN giving the Commanders a C+ in their offseason grade? And then how, despite how positive you are or how negative you are on Washington's offseason, what is the one move they didn't make that makes you go, ah, they're really going to regret that when the games start to count in September? 1-800-636-1067 is the number. You can tweet at me as well. It's at @NELL_BTP. Matthew is in D.C. Wants to have it. What's going on, Matthew? How you feeling?
Hey, youngest in charge. How are you, sir?
I'm good, man. Long time no hear, Matthew. I'm glad you are all okay out there in the universe, my friend.
Thank you, and I do not want you going to, I guess, Odyssey Sports Radio is what they call it now. I do not want you going there, though. If you do, I will follow you and listen to you because you rock.
I appreciate
the microphone.
I appreciate you, Matt.
I want to add to what you're saying about the grade, about our off-season choices. We don't have infinite resources and we don't have infinite time. So the real question is, what did we do wrong or bad that he would have us take away and add to the offensive line? In other words, did we make an extra move at a position where we were already okay, and therefore that was a waste and that move should have been spent on an offensive lineman? Because you really just need to grade what the actual actions they took were, and did they do a sufficient amount with all of the weak spots that they had? And to your point, they did on the offensive line. So I think a C grade or C+ grade is too low. It's definitely got to be B or B+.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly, Matt. Can you answer this question that I was posing out as well? Obviously, you're pretty bullish about what they were able to do this offseason. What's the one move that they didn't make, I guess, that will make you go, you know what, they're going to regret not making that move once the games start to count for real in September?
Well, I agree with you. I think it's the secondary.
Yeah.
I mean, of all of the weak spots, because the offensive line was a weak spot as well, but they at least did more there with substantive acquisitions than they have done in the D-back line, D-back room.
Yeah. Gotcha. Matt, appreciate you calling in as always, my friend. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. Seth Walder of ESPN gave the Washington Commanders a C+ for their offseason grade? Do you think the grade's too high? Do you think the grade's too low? And then, even if you're bullish on the Washington Commanders offseason, which move didn't the team, or which move, it's a tongue twister here all of a sudden, which move that Washington didn't make this offseason do you think that they'll regret when the games begin to count for real in September? 1-800-636-1067 is the number. Sean is in D.C. wants to tap in. What's going on, Sean?
Hey, what's going on? How y'all doing?
I'm good, man. How you doing?
I'm good. Don't get upset, but I feel that Washington needs to go out here and grab a true number one wide receiver, a guy like DeAndre Hopkins, a Sutton, someone that can stretch the field and get open. I know Terry gets three balls a game,
what?
And he goes down the field and catch a bomb, and then you don't hear from him the rest of the game. And also, I feel that Washington needs to go out and grab a left tackle, a true left tackle like Bakhtiari, but I heard he's not coming here. But a veteran left tackle and a true number one wide receiver. Thank you and take care.
Yeah, Sean, I appreciate it, and I guess I'll answer the call off air. You know what? Let's do this next. Because Sean segues this perfectly into one of the unfortunate hot-button topics this week in D.C. Sports Talk Radio, as well as Commanders Twitter. A lot of folks in a frenzy about whether or not Washington should be willing to go out and acquire 49ers wide receiver Brandon Ayuk. We will take a quick timeout, pay some bills when we come back. I'll give you my thoughts on how the Washington Commanders should address the wide receiver position moving forward. That's next on The Fan. All righty. Still moving and grooving here on this Thursday night edition of Overtime. It's the Youngest in Charge movement. Linnell Willingham will take you up to 10 o'clock before we hand things over to the Infinity Sports Network, talking all things burgundy and gold during this 8 o'clock hour. Seth Walder of ESPN put out his off-season grades list for ESPN.com, gave the Commanders a C+. We took some of your calls on your reaction to that. I think the grade is too low, and it gives off hater vibes. Is Seth Walder a hater of the Washington Commanders? I do understand where he was coming from.
No, I don't. No. If the only problem on the Commanders was the offensive line, I would get the grade. If they were like, they just ignored their one big flaw. No.
Yeah, so it kind of gives off hater vibes. It's what it is. But as we let you know earlier, our pal Nate Davis of USA Today gave the Commanders an A for their offseason grade. I wonder what Nate Davis's grade for Washington's offseason would be if they were able to complete the hypothetical trade that everyone on Commanders Twitter wants to get done, that is trading for 49ers wide receiver Brandon Ayuk. Now, to give this conversation full context, our pals at Pro Football Focus, Trevor Sikkema, good friend of the program, one of my dudes, was the one responsible for this list in particular. Pro Football Focus came out and ranked the top receiving corps in the National Football League. They came out and ranked the top receiving corps in the National Football League. And he ranked the San Francisco 49ers as the best receiving corps in the National Football League. And you got to go a ways, way down the list to see where he ranked Washington's receiving corps. Last was the New England Patriots. 31st was the LA Chargers. 30th, the Denver Broncos. 29th, the Carolina Panthers. 28th, the New York Giants, who were the worst ranked receiving corps in the NFC East. For Washington, he gave the Commanders receiving corps, he ranked them 20th. In the National Football League, in the bottom third percentile, or about in the bottom third percentile of the NFL. His explanation read as follows: inexperience and new faces keep the Commanders from ranking higher, but they appear to be building a strong offense. Terry McLaurin is a stud. Jahan Dotson can be a solid wide receiver 3, and rookie Luke McCaffrey is a unique big slot receiver. add Zach Ertz and Ben Sinnott from the tight end room, and now Austin Eckler out of the backfield. And this is a sneakily fun receiving core. The explanation that Sikkema gave, if I was to just read you that explanation, which I just gave to you, and you didn't know where they were ranked, based on how positively he spoke about the unit, I thought they would rank at least 17, 16. But I get it. I get this ranking from Trevor Sikkema. I have major questions about Washington's receiving core after Terry McLaurin. Right? I personally think Jahan Dotson will bounce back in 2024. I think last year, based off of what we're hearing about the way Eric Bieniemy was running things, dudes couldn't even wear their damn hat backwards. That was more important for Eric Bieniemy. Being a disciplinarian was more important for Eric Bieniemy than being a good football coach. And that is very evident based off of what has been reported since he's been fired. He was more worried about being a disciplinarian than being a good offensive coordinator. And I brought up the hat backwards thing because if you're just tuning into the fan and you haven't gotten the chance to listen all day long, the Washington Post put out a perspective piece on new Commanders head coach Dan Quinn. And in that piece, they interviewed or got a quote from Commanders offensive guard Sam Cosmi. And in that quote, Cosmi spilled the tea that Eric Bieniemy did not allow players to wear their hat backwards last year. And when I read this quote earlier, I thought, no way. No way Eric Bieniemy, the grown-ass man that he is, no way that he decided that wearing hats backwards was going to be the straw that broke the camel's back for him. Not the fact that Sam Howell held the football and allowed the grenade to blow up in his hands every Sunday. That wasn't the straw that broke the camel's back. It was wearing backwards hats. The more and more we hear about what happened last year with Eric Bieniemy running this offense, the more I believe that everything that happened last year was a direct result of him being incompetent. Now, this is a complete 180 that I've done on Eric Bieniemy. Because as I said, during the season, it is very easy to get caught up in the mix and you're looking at things on a week-by-week basis. Now that the season's ended, I've gotten to look at this thing from a bird's-eye view and taking the 1,000-foot approach. Eric Bieniemy is a big reason why things went awry last year for the entire team. So much so that, like, I don't know if the offensive line was as bad as they performed last year. Were they just not put in optimal position because Eric Bieniemy is an incompetent offensive coordinator? I don't know. I don't know if Jahan Dotson and Terry McLaurin struggled last year the way some people think they are, or the way some people think they did. Did they struggle last year, or were they just not put in position to succeed enough? That's my big overall takeaway from all of this, and it ties back into what I originally wanted to talk about. A lot of you out there in the Commanders Twitterverse, right, want to see Washington. You want to see Washington trade for Brandon Ayuk of the San Francisco 49ers. And my short answer is this, right? I think Brandon Ayuk is a damn good football player. 67 balls caught for first downs last year from Ayuk. Massive. 8 touchdowns, 1,300 yards receiving. He balled out last year. Give you that. But, and this goes not just for wide receiver, but any position that Washington is looking to add players to. At this point in the offseason calendar, as we sit here about a month out from the start of training camp, they can stand to add pieces up front on the offensive line. They can stand to add an edge rusher. They can stand to add a corner. They can stand to add a wide receiver. I would not be surprised if they added Brandon Ayuk, right? I wouldn't be surprised if they added a Stephon Gilmore. I wouldn't be surprised if they added, another edge rusher. But I would be surprised if it happened before training camp. And here's why. I think training camp provides you the opportunity, right, to see your guys with pads on, not playing underwear Olympics, right? Training camp, especially up front along the offensive line. That's why I continue to say, like, I don't think they would add a piece until they got to see what their guys look like in camp. Because we know it's hard to get a real evaluation and get a gauge on what they are right now based off of spring practices, that where there are no contact. This is not football, what we've seen here in OTAs and minicamp. As much as I love to go out and watch it because it's fun and it gets the juices flowing, it's not football. I can say the same thing about the wide receiver position. You drafted Luke McCaffrey in the third round. You, on the Commanders log, if you guys out there got to watch the Commanders log latest episode on YouTube, they do a great job, by the way, of putting together that content and giving you an inside look at some of the decision-making processes. They were extremely bullish on Luke McCaffrey during the Commanders log. After practice, Luke McCaffrey has been seen taking handoffs. I reported that first, by the way. I want my credit for that. I tweeted that out first, that Luke McCaffrey was taking handoffs after practice. I noticed that on the one day that I was out there during the offseason to this point. And when I was out there also, he was running exclusively with the second and third team. So what I think is happening with Luke McCaffrey is, one, they're super bullish on him. And maybe they are trying to keep the information away from the general public that he is going to be a big piece of the offense. Similarly to how they treated Terry McLaurin during his rookie year. Remember, Terry didn't even play in the preseason. And then week one goes out and catches two bombs right off the rip because they knew what they had in-house and they wanted to keep him a secret. I think that may be the case with Luke McCaffrey. But all in all, my sentiments remain the same. I don't expect them to add to wide receiver or offensive line or corner until they get to training camp and the pads come on and they get to see exactly what they're working with. Now, if they don't like what they've got, I have no problem trading for Brandon Ayuk and giving him a long-term contract extension. I think he is a player that is still continuing to ascend, and the relationship that he has with Jaden Daniels obviously makes the move more intriguing, more enticing. But if they don't trade for Brandon Ayuk, I don't think it's the end of the world. If they don't add to the receiver room, I don't think it's the end of the world, because I think from their vantage point, not adding to that room, a vote of confidence in the guys they have in-house instead of them, so quote-unquote, settling. Let's go out to Vince and Akikik here before we hit the break. Vince, what's going on, my man? How you feeling?
What's up, Linnell?
How you feeling?
I'm good, man. I'm good. As I was saying to the producer who took the call, I like Ayuk. I like the connection him and Jaden Daniel got. I do believe he's a dog. I don't know if he's as big as a dog as he thinks he is, but a dog is a dog. Never hurts to add a weapon to the offense.
For sure.
And I'm down for signing him, you know, as long as it makes sense. And I get people saying, you know, well, it should make sense because we got plenty of money to spend. And I get that part of it, too. But I guess my thing is, if we're going to be aggressive about a trade, if we're going to trade draft capital, if we're going to spend money, why not use all these new scouts, all this new scouting department, all this new brain trust to go find us a left tackle? Like, if we're going to be aggressive about something and somebody going to be willing to give something up, let's go find a left tackle. And somebody might say, okay, yeah, they don't give up starting left tackles. But I know, you know, they everybody has depth, everybody has bench. There's always somebody somewhere that just needs an opportunity. So let's go find that dude that's sitting on the bench somewhere that's like, yeah, I'm willing to be traded because I'm ready to start. Like, if we're gonna make a move, we'll make a move for a left tackle. That's my question. So like, if we're gonna do something.
And I hear what you're saying, and it kind of goes back to what I've been saying about, I think they're going to wait until training camp before they add to any position because they know what they have in-house to this point. But they'll get and find out a little bit more once the pads start popping and once things get going for real in training camp. But as you kind of alluded to, Vince, and this is why I would kind of shut that down, I don't think anyone is trading or giving up on a left tackle that's worth a damn. It's the best way that I could put it. Appreciate the call as always, my brother. 1-800-919-3776. 636-1067 is the number. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, the final hour of power here on this Thursday night edition of Overtime. We get to the Washington Nationals, who won earlier today, or lost, rather, earlier today, 5-2 at the hands of the Arizona Diamondbacks. I'll tell you what the big story is regarding the Nationals, and it's not the fact that they're in contention for the NL wild card. Stay tuned. More Overtime next. All righty. Still moving and grooving here on this Thursday night edition of Overtime. It's the Youngest in Charge movement. Linnell Willingham will take you up to 10 o'clock before we hand things over to the Infinity Sports Network, talking all things burgundy and gold during this 8 o'clock hour. Seth Walder of ESPN put out his off-season grades list for ESPN.com, gave the Commanders a C+. We took some of your calls on your reaction to that. I think the grade is too low, and it gives off hater vibes. Seth Walder, a hater of the Washington Commanders? I do understand where he was coming from.
No, I don't. If the only problem on the Commanders was the offensive line, I would get the grade. If they were like, they just ignored their one big flaw. No.
Yeah, so it kind of gives off hater vibes. It's what it is. But as we let you know earlier, our pal Nate Davis of USA Today gave the Commanders an A for their offseason grade. I wonder what Nate Davis's grade for Washington's offseason would be if they were able to complete the hypothetical trade that everyone on Commanders Twitter wants to get done, that is trading for 49ers wide receiver Brandon Ayuk. Now, to give this conversation full context, our pals at Pro Football Focus, Trevor Sikkema, good friend of the program, one of my dudes, was the one responsible for this list in particular. Pro Football Focus came out and ranked the top receiving corps in the National Football League. It came out and ranked the top receiving corps in the National Football League. And he ranked the San Francisco 49ers as the best receiving corps in the National Football League. And you got to go a way down the list to see where he ranked Washington's receiving corps. Last was the New England Patriots. 31st was the LA Chargers. 30th, the Denver Broncos. 29th, the Carolina Panthers. 28th, the New York Giants, who were the worst ranked receiving corps in the NFC East. For Washington, he gave the Commanders receiving corps, he ranked them 20th. In the National Football League, in the bottom third percentile, or about in the bottom third percentile of the NFL. His explanation read as follows: inexperience and new faces keep the Commanders from ranking higher, but they appear to be building a strong offense. Terry McLaurin is a stud. Jahan Dotson can be a solid wide receiver 3, and rookie Luke McCaffrey is a unique big slot receiver. Add Zach Ertz and Ben Sinnott from the tight end room, and now Austin Eckler out of the backfield. And this is a sneakily fun receiving core. The explanation that Sikkema gave, if I was to just read you that explanation, which I just gave to you, and you didn't know where they were ranked, based on how positively he spoke about the unit, I thought they would rank at least 17, 16. But I get it. I get this ranking from Trevor Sikkema. I have major questions about Washington's receiving corps after Terry McLaurin. Right? I personally think Jahan Dotson will bounce back in 2024. I think last year, based off of what we're hearing about the way Eric Bieniemy was running things, dudes couldn't even wear their damn hat backwards. That was more important. For Eric Bieniemy, being a disciplinarian was more important for Eric Bieniemy than being a good football coach. And that is very evident based off of what has been reported since he's been fired. He was more worried about being a disciplinarian than being a good offensive coordinator. And I brought up the hat backwards thing because if you're just tuning into the Fan and you haven't gotten the chance to listen all day long, the Washington Post – put out a perspective piece on new Commanders head coach Dan Quinn. And in that piece, they interviewed or got a quote from Commanders offensive guard Sam Cosmi. And in that quote, Cosmi spilled the tea that Eric Bieniemy did not allow players to wear their hat backwards last year. And when I read this quote earlier, I thought, no way. No way, Eric Bieniemy, the grown-ass man that he is, no way that he decided that wearing hats backwards was going to be the straw that broke the camel's back for him. Not the fact that Sam Howell held the football and allowed the grenade to blow up in his hands every Sunday. That wasn't the straw that broke the camel's back. It was wearing backwards hats. The more and more we hear about what happened last year with Eric Bieniemy running this offense, the more I believe that everything that happened last year was a direct result of him being incompetent. Now, this is a complete 180 that I've done on Eric Bieniemy, because as I said, during the season, it is very easy to get caught up in the mix and you're looking at things on a week-by-week basis. Now that the season's ended, I've gotten to look at this thing from a bird's eye view and taking the 1,000-foot approach. Eric Bieniemy is a big reason why things went awry last year for the entire team. So much so that, like, I don't know if the offensive line was as bad as they performed last year. Were they just not put in optimal position because Eric Bieniemy is an incompetent offensive coordinator? I don't know. I don't know if Jahan Dotson and Terry McLaurin struggled last year the way some people think they are. Other ways some people think they did. Did they struggle last year, or were they just not put in position to succeed enough? That's my big overall takeaway from all of this. And it ties back into what I originally wanted to talk about. A lot of you out there in the Commanders Twitterverse, right, want to see Washington. You want to see Washington trade for Brandon Ayuk of the San Francisco 49ers. And my short answer is this, right? I think Brandon Ayuk is a damn good football player. 67 balls caught for first downs last year from Ayuk. Massive. 8 touchdowns, 1,300 yards receiving. He balled out last year. Give you that. But, and this goes not just for wide receiver, but any position that Washington is looking to add players to. At this point in the offseason calendar, as we sit here about a month out from the start of training camp, they can stand to add pieces up front on the offensive line. They can stand to add an edge rusher. They can stand to add a corner. They can stand to add a wide receiver. I would not be surprised if they added Brandon Ayuk, right? I wouldn't be surprised if they added a Stephon Gilmore. I wouldn't be surprised if they added, you know, another edge rusher. But I would be surprised if it happened before training camp. And here's why. I think training camp provides you the opportunity, right, to see your guys with pads on, not playing underwear Olympics, right? Training camp, especially up front along the offensive line. That's why I continue to say, like, I don't think they would add a piece until they got to see what their guys look like in camp. Because we know it's hard to get a real evaluation and get a gauge on what they are right now based off of spring practices, that where there are no contact. This is not football, what we've seen here in OTAs and minicamp. As much as I love to go out and watch it because it's fun and it gets the juices flowing, it's not football. I can say the same thing about the wide receiver position. You drafted Luke McCaffrey in the 3rd round. You, on the Commanders log, if you guys out there got to watch the Commanders log latest episode on YouTube, they do a great job, by the way, of putting together that content and giving you an inside look at some of the decision-making processes. They were extremely bullish on Luke McCaffrey during the Commanders log. After practice, Luke McCaffrey has been seen taking handoffs. I reported that first. By the way, I want my credit for that. I tweeted that out first, that Luke McCaffrey was taking handoffs after practice. I noticed that on the one day that I was out there during the offseason to this point. But, and when I was out there also, he was running exclusively with the second and third team. So, what I think is happening with Luke McCaffrey is, one, they're super bullish on him. And maybe they're trying to keep the information away from the general public that he is going to be a big piece of the offense. Similarly to how they treated Terry McLaurin during his rookie year. Remember, Terry didn't even play in the preseason. And then week one goes out and catches two bombs right off the rip because they knew what they had in-house and they wanted to keep him a secret. I think that may be the case with Luke McCaffrey. But all in all, my sentiments remain the same. I don't expect them to add to wide receiver or offensive line or corner until they get to training camp and the pads come on and they get to see exactly what they're working with. Now, if they don't like what they've got, I have no problem trading for Brandon Ayuk and giving him a long-term contract extension. I think he is a player that is still continuing to ascend, and the relationship that he has with Jaden Daniels obviously makes the move more intriguing, more enticing. But if they don't trade for Brandon Ayuk, I don't think it's the end of the world. If they don't add to the receiver room, I don't think it's the end of the world, because I think from their vantage point, not adding to that room, a vote of confidence in the guys they have in-house instead of them, so quote-unquote, settling. Let's go out to Vince and Akiki here before we hit the break. Vince, what's going on, my man? How you feeling?
What's up, Linnell?
How you feeling?
I'm good, man. I'm good. As I was saying to the producer who took the call, I like Ayuk. I like the connection him and Jaden Daniels got. I do believe he's a dog. I don't know if he's as big as a dog as he thinks he is, but a dog is a dog. Never hurts to add a weapon to the offense.
For sure.
And I'm down for signing him, you know, as long as it makes sense. And I get people saying, you know, well, it should make sense because we got plenty of money to spend. And I get that part of it, too. But I guess my thing is, if we're going to be aggressive about a trade, we're going to trade draft capital, we're going to spend money, why not use all these new scouts, all this new scouting department, all this new brain trust to go find us a left tackle? Like, if we're going to be aggressive about something and somebody going to be willing to give something up, let's go find a left tackle. And somebody might say, okay, yeah, they don't give up starting left tackles. But I know, you know, they everybody has depth, everybody has bench. There's always somebody somewhere that just needs an opportunity. So let's go find that dude that's sitting on the bench somewhere that's like, yeah, I'm willing to be traded because I'm ready to start. Like, if we're gonna make a move, we'll make a move for a left tackle. That's my question. Like, if we're gonna do something.
And I hear what you're saying, and it kind of goes back to what I've been saying about, I think they're going to wait until training camp before they add to any position because they know what they have in-house to this point. But they'll get and find out a little bit more once the pads start popping and once things get going for real in training camp. But as you kind of alluded to, Vince, and this is why I would kind of shut that down, I don't think anyone is trading or giving up on a left tackle that's worth a damn. It's the best way that I could put it. Appreciate the call as always, my brother. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, the final hour of power here on this Thursday night edition of Overtime. We'll get to the Washington Nationals, who won earlier today, or lost, rather, earlier today, 5-2 at the hands of the Arizona Diamondbacks. I'll tell you what the big story is regarding the Nationals, and it's not the fact that they're in contention for the NL wild card. Stay tuned. More Overtime next.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Northsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
I'm John Oran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.